Welcome to Following Noadon, a Stormlight podcast. This podcast takes you chapter by chapter through Brandon Sanderson's entire Cosmere. Thank you for joining us. This is your host, Trevor, speaking to you in August of 2024. Over the first several episodes of this podcast, we had some poor audio issues that we worked over a long period of time to solve. What you're listening to is a remastered version of the first episode, or as best as I could. Since June of 2020, we have changed our audio recording software, our mics, our computers, and our editing software multiple times. If this podcast interests you, I encourage you to check out our current episodes of whatever we are covering at the moment. If I have time, I'll go back and remaster more episodes. Thank you for tuning in, and enjoy our journey.
Hello. Welcome to Following Noadon, a Stormlight podcast. We will be going through the Way of Kings, week by week, chapter by chapter, talking about it in depth. This is engineered towards the first-time reader of the Way of Kings, but if you've read it multiple times, you're also welcome to join us. I have two friends that will be joining me. I have read it before, but my two friends have not. My older brother, Elliot, and my friend, Paul. Paul, can you talk to me about your experience with The Way of Kings so far?
Certainly, Trevor. I'm listening to the audiobook currently, and I still do not know what Following Noadon means yet, but I'm really looking forward to finding out, as well as I'm looking forward to making some wrong predictions on what's going to happen throughout.
Good, good. There's plenty of things to make wrong predictions about, as we'll get into in this first episode. Elliot, talk to me.
Certainly.
Yeah, Trevor, I've got the ink and paper version of the book in my hands. I'm super excited to be picking this up and starting it for the first time. I think you've been bugging me to read this book for probably 3 years now. It's been on my list. I don't know anything about what's to happen, but I'm super excited to start this journey.
I'm very excited for both of you to read this. I have loved these books for 3 years now. This will be my sixth reread of The Way of Kings and onward, and I am very, very excited to work through this with you guys. All right, gentlemen, first episode of Following Noadon, a Stormlight podcast. Today we will be doing the prelude, the prologue, chapters 1 and chapters 2 of The Way of Kings. Before we get started on those, Elliot, do you have any predictions, expectations, hopes of not only The Way of Kings, but the whole Stormlight archive that we're about to jump into?
Ooh, big question to start out with.
Absolutely.
Expectations really high. You've sold this one pretty hard, so my expectations are high. I'm hoping for epic. I'm hoping for a grand scale of story, which I think I've already gotten a little taste of that in these first few chapters. I'm hoping for adventure. I'm hoping for good characters I can root for, characters I can get behind. Hopefully they don't all disappoint me. We'll see.
We will see. And you will get epic, don't worry. Paul, what are your expectations going into this?
Also very big. You've worked tirelessly to get me to read / listen to this book. So I'm making a big commitment here. I'm really hoping for some good character development. That's usually my favorite thing in stories. It's what makes me really intrigued. So I'm really hoping for some of that. I have very high hopes. I'm hoping it will be as good as Lord of the Rings in my mind. You've sold it that high.
I have sold it that high.
That's not something I would say lightly.
It's not something that you should say lightly. As you can see, I am a Lord of the Rings fan from what you can see.
Casual fan.
And yes, I do think Brandon Sanderson is just as good as Tolkien's Lord of the Rings. I'm very excited about it. And Paul,
wow,
you're not necessarily a huge reader. Like, you do enjoy reading, but you're not like the biggest reader. Elliot, you are more of a reader. So that'll be interesting to see both of you guys' reactions to it. So let's talk about the prelude. Any interesting initial thoughts. Do you guys have any idea what's happening in the prelude? It throws you in. It doesn't give any explanation.
Yes, it very much just threw me right into this world. I don't know, with these big monsters. I don't know. But it was very intriguing because that it shows that there's going to be a whole lot to learn about the world and the stuff. And also, I thought most notable was that the character mentioned Kalak, mm-hmm. how he, it says that he, you know, has experienced death and such. And so I'm really curious to see if people can like die and come back or something. I feel like that's something really interesting. We'll see where that goes.
Okay. People dying. Elliot?
Yes.
Yeah, it was hard to pick up on, you know, where exactly we've been thrown into the action. I mean, I totally expect to pick up an action fiction book and get thrown right in the middle of action, but the question was like, are we meeting soldiers? Are we meeting gods? Are we meeting, you know, kings? I'm kind of leaning towards the gods end of things with these guys clearly, yes, dying and coming back and all this stuff, but so many little names and references to things that I feel like I should know, but I don't. Like, what's a Thunderclast and what's a Surgebinder? What's a Dustbringer? What's a Radiant? Like, just kept coming and coming and coming. It's like, what's that? What's that? What's that?
Yep. All right. Good. Good. Yes. It does give you, like, I think it gives you 10 or so nouns, and it doesn't explain any of them.
But I want to know now. Like, I want to find out what these are.
All right. Well,
Yeah. Can you tell us?
No, I can't tell you, but thanks. Nice try.
I thought that's what you were here for.
No, I'm here to laugh at you as you try to figure out what they are.
Okay. That works.
All right. So something that really struck me, I remember on my first read through, I had no idea what was happening in the prelude, and I assume that's the same for you. But on my reread, it's very striking to me how much of an ending it feels like. It feels like he puts his sword in the ground and he walks off into the distance and the credits roll. he meets his friend, Kalak does, and they talk about how they're not returning to Damnation this time. And he feels very resigned to it because he really is afraid of it and doesn't want to. And they resign themselves to, they are going to strand their friend alone in Damnation, and they leave, and that's the end of the chapter. That's the end of the prelude. It feels like an ending.
Yeah, that guy is gonna be really pissed. That's that's my prediction, is that guy that they just ditched in Damnation or Hell or wherever he ended up, he's not gonna be too thrilled with that, I don't think.
Yep, there's also plenty of stuff that I could try to explain here, but we are just going to move along because I don't want to spoil anything. All right. Before we start the prologue, it starts with a couple of names, and we have Paul, who is listening to the audiobook, and Elliot, who is reading the classic book. So we have an interesting little contrast here. Of Paul understands how Michael Kramer and Kate Redding on Audible pronounce all of the names and has no concept of how they're spelled, or doesn't accurately know how they're spelled. He just knows how they sound. And Elliot is the traditional reader of, he understands how they're spelled, but it's up to the reader to interpret how they're said. So, Paul, how would you spell the assassin in white's name?
This is an easy one.
Okay.
The initial assassin in the prologue?
Yep.
It's just Zeth, right?
Well, okay. And what's his name?
Zeth.
Okay. Zeth.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you're wrong.
That's correct.
Elliot, how would you like, or would easy. You like to correct him?
Well, he kind of said it there, so maybe I can't. But having just read it, I think the pronunciation I would have gone for is Sazeth.
Okay.
Sazeth?
Is it like Z-T? something? Zeteth?
You can give him the spelling, Elliot.
Not quite. It's close. You're just missing one letter. It just starts with an S. So it's Szeth.
Interesting.
But
okay.
But are you telling me that they just pronounce that Zeth?
Yes.
Zeth.
They pronounce it Zeth as in a Z and then E-T-H. They
just, E-T-H, yeah.
The S is silent is in the audiobook.
Okay. I can roll with that. I can roll with that, I think. Little mental correction.
Makes it easy.
Zeth's son Valano is his name. Okay. And Elliot.
By the way, that was the only name that I really felt confident I could spell correctly. So,
well, you're in for a wild ride here.
Over one.
Yep.
Elliot.
Okay.
What is, how do you say the name of the king that is assassinated?
I got to find it here. Wait, there it was. So the king that gets assassinated, I would read his name King. I'm gonna go simple. King Gavilar.
Okay. Is there a last name there? Do you know his last name?
Oh yeah, there is. Hold on. How about King Gavilar Colin?
Colin. Okay.
Gavilar Colin.
Paul, give me a stab at how to spell that.
I'm also going to go pretty simple here. I'm going to go Gallinar colon.
Hold up. Whoa. Back up.
Wait, did I say it wrong?
Yep. Elliot, give him the pronunciation, or give him how you would say it again.
Okay.
Gavilar.
Okay, so it's just Gavallar. The last name?
Yep.
Kholin.
Okay.
Nice.
You got the last name correct. The first name is slightly different, but you got most of it. It's Gavilar. Gavilar.
Okay.
Gavilar. Who's the king who gets assassinated, who Zeth assassinates.
We got him.
Okay.
Our last one is from chapter 2. And
oh dear,
this is the slaver that has Kaladin under his ownership. Elliot, how would you like to say this name?
No, I think Paul should go first.
No,
Paul,
no, maybe? I think this is an Elliot go first one.
Okay.
I also think this is an Elliot go first one.
Ugh. All right. Again, I'm going to go with like a fairly straightforward phonetic pronunciation of a not very straightforward name. I'm going to go with the name of the slaver is Tevlakiv. Okay. Tevlakiv.
All right, Paul, how would you like to spell this name? Or how would you say it, first of all? And then how would you spell it?
So the best I can remember it being said was Tevlakov. About like that, Tevlakov. But if he said, can you say how you did say it, Elliot?
Tevlakiv.
That gives me a lot of insight here. Okay. So I'm going to go that it.
Good
it's
luck.
Either starts with a T or a D. I'm going to go out there and say it's a T. So we've got Tevlakiv. We're going to go T I V L.
You okay?
Tevlakiv. All right, T-I, I don't remember where I left off. T-I, V-L, O, C-K-O-F.
Is that your final answer?
That's it. I don't know.
Oof, I think you're about 40% right.
I'll give you a hint. The entire name has one vowel. And you're still not going to get it.
Okay, so I'm going to go different then. I'm going to go D-V-L. DVLO. KYF. That's my best guess. It's.
You were close at that time, actually.
Really? Okay. Ish. Cool.
So the correct spelling.
Trevor put him out of his misery.
The correct spelling is TVLAKV. Tavlakov is how they say it in the audiobook.
Okay. I definitely thought that was a D listening to the audiobook this whole time, every time I've heard it.
It's a T. It's Tavlakov. All right.
Okay.
That was fun. Paul's one.
That was harder than I thought it was going to be.
Paul's one for three.
I thought I had it.
Actually, you misspelled Gavilar too, so you're actually zero for three.
But I got colon.
You did get colon.
Give me a half point. Give me half point
out of three. Yeah, we'll keep a tally somewhere. All right. Headed back. I don't trust you keeping track of your own points.
No, we'll put it in the video right here.
All right. Prologue. Talk to me about Zeth Elliot.
Interesting character to jump in and actually get to spend a little bit of time with. I'll say that my biggest question after reading through the prologue is, who is controlling him? Obviously, he seems very torn between he has to do this thing, but he doesn't really want to do this thing. But then at the same time, he kind of seems to at least a little bit be enjoying what he's doing and not caring so much. I don't know. My opinion of him changed like four times throughout just the one chapter.
Okay. Paul, talk to me.
I think he, up to what we've read, I think he's the coolest and most interesting character because I don't understand much about him. His power, like what he was doing, was really cool, kind of like bending gravity seemingly and stuff. I thought was really awesome. Personal favorite part. And his like attitude was interesting. He wasn't like an assassin who wanted to kill the king, I guess, for his own beliefs. Mm-hmm. I didn't ever feel that way. He's obviously sent by someone. I'm very curious who and what kind of loyalty that implies. I very much want Zeth to come back in some way or find out more about him. Definitely the character I'm most interested in thus far.
Okay. So there's three parts to Zeth, I guess, that you should pick up on here. One is his religion. Two is his honor. And three is lashings. So his powers, his magical powers, they call them lashings. Mm-hmm. So his religion. He believes that you shouldn't walk on stone. Yeah. Why? They didn't tell you why. That's just what he believes. So he's got some interesting different beliefs from what we would call normal, I guess. So the Alethi are the center of Roshar culture. They are very much the conquerors. They're the widespread. They're the English of Western Roshar society.
Can we pause on that for a second? Like, I have a question there.
Sure.
So there's a couple different names that get thrown out in both this chapter and the next ones coming up. So you've got Alethi, you've got Shin, you've got Parshendi. There's a couple others they throw in there too.
Okay.
Are these nationalities or are these races or are these like families? I didn't quite get that.
They're races. So
races.
A Parshendi is a different race than a human. But an Alethi and a Shin are both human. So,
okay.
Alethkar is a nation. The Alethi are from Alethkar. Shinovar is a nation. The Shin are from Shinovar. The Parshendi are a different race entirely.
Got it.
So Parshmen are, and forever have been the last 4,000 years on Roshar, are docile creatures as opposed to humans that are slaves. And so now with the with the discovery of Parshendi, all of cultural lines across Roshar are going to be blurred because nobody, Parshmen have no rights. Parshmen are not viewed as human for everybody on Roshar. But now that Parshendi have been discovered, they don't know what to do with them. They just made a peace treaty with the Parshendi in the prologue, but the Parshendi immediately broke it by assassinating Gavilar Kolin.
Thanks, Zeth.
Thanks, Zeth.
Yeah, thanks, Zeth.
But specifically, and Zeth tells you this in the prologue, that he has no intention, doesn't want to assassinate Gavilar. It's just that's what his masters told him to do, and he doesn't question it.
Which has something to do with him being truthless, which I don't know what that means yet.
Correct, you don't know what that means yet.
I did think that the lashings was particularly fascinating. I was curious coming into this book what flavor of magic we were going to have. I knew there was going to be magic just from, you know, first impressions or whatnot. But, you know, what kind of type of magic is going to be kind of a nebulous, undescribable magic? Is it going to be a very, like, mathematical, physical science? And lashings makes me think it's more on the latter side, where magic has very specific rules and it's powered, I guess, so far by the Stormlight. So he has to have the Stormlight in order to do these magical actions with the lashings. So I'm curious to see if that holds or if that's going to change.
So Brandon Sanderson, in his lectures at BYU, explains, he has a lecture on creating magic systems in fantasy writing, and he splits it into two different magic systems of hard and soft magic systems, and explains it with Lord of the Rings. A hard magic system is one that has explicit rules of if you can use this magic, but it comes at a cost, aka the ring. You can use the ring and it goes invisible and you go invisible. However, the ring wraiths and the Sauron are going to find you. Also, you're probably going to go insane. You get to live forever and you get to go invisible, but you're going to go insane. So there's also soft magic also in Lord of the Rings. Gandalf has a bunch of magic in the Lord of the Rings that he can do, and you don't know why. You know he can do cool stuff, you don't know what it costs, right? But he can make doors glow, he can make bright lights flash at parties, he can do all sorts of cool things. But you don't know what it costs him or why he does it when he does it. So, lashings, and it, you'll get a lot of clear rules later, is a very hard magic system. Has very clear rules, yeah. Very clear. It's more like a force of nature than it is a... He tries to explain it as if it's a force of nature.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay. That's... And Zeth's honor is what you're supposed to pick up from the prologue. So he very clearly, from his perspective at least, it's a clear thinker. He's not crazy, but he was told to kill the king and be seen doing it, and he's going to do it because of his honor. And this is a very extreme, that this is one extreme. In the next two chapters, we'll talk about the other extreme of honor. The first extreme of honor is, I believe what I'm doing is right, and I will do whatever I'm going to be told to do because I believe that they are right. So he has blind trust in whoever is telling him to do these things. Even though he thinks killing people is wrong, he's going to kill people because he thinks that they are right in telling him to do so. So he's going to keep his honor, keep his word to them, no matter what they tell him to do.
And it's even more than that, too, because in the chapter he talks about almost a part of him almost wants to die. Like part of him almost wants to fail in this mission, but his honor won't let him do that.
Correct.
His honor won't let him fail against the Shard Bearer, which we learn is the king later, even though part of him almost wishes he'd like put him out of his misery or something like that.
Correct.
I thought it did a great job of not just whenever I read a book about fantasy and fighting or and such, I always expect like good envisioning of the battlefield and such, but I wasn't expecting to see so much of Zeth's thought process and how he meticulously thought out like this is going to happen and these are my motives almost for doing things or why I won't do things and such. He was very like calculated and such, and that was like almost took me by surprise. I wasn't expecting something like that from this assassin.
Cool.
On the topic of the magic in this world, I feel like I'm gonna open a whole can of worms here, but I'm dying to talk about Spren. And because it talked about him quite a bit in the prologue, I believe it was talking about Fear Spren and how they were like purple, kind of like globs.
Okay.
And there seems to be Spren for everything. There's Water Spren, Wind Spren, Fear Spren, Rot Spren. Like, I almost think of them as like the atoms of this place. It's just tiny little like living things almost, you know?
Okay.
Really, I don't even know what to think about them. I've honestly like tried not to think too much about it because I feel like I'll confuse myself.
Some Water Spren. I've got some thought Spren on this. When we first encountered them, I thought it was just going to be like emotions or like physical, like bodily effects, like fear and hunger and things tied to people. But then later on, yeah, we run into like you said, Rot Spren and Wind Spren, and obviously Spren spread into other things too, not just like people's reactions to things. Which I'm sure we'll talk about later in chapter two, we really dive into what are these Spren capable of or what are they? I want to know.
Understandable. So what I will say on Spren so far is they are visual embodiments of nature. So
can everyone see them?
Yes. So there are some visible Spren and some invisible Spren.
It mentioned with the Wind Spren that they could like choose to just be seen by who they were trying to torment. Correct. At the time. I remembered that. As far as other Spren, I don't remember any specifications.
So yes, most Spren are visible as far as raw emotions and raw elements, like elements of nature, wind, water, fire, like that type of thing. You can, the Spren are going to, what's the word I'm looking for? Gravitate towards what type of element they are. So if you're very afraid, you're going to attract Fear Spren. If you're on fire, you're going to attract Fire Spren. If you're falling off a cliff, you're going to attract Wind Spren. So, let's talk about chapter 2 with the quick Wind Spren. We'll go back to chapter 1 here in a second. But the Wind Spren kind of freaks Kaladin out because the Wind Spren is talking to Kaladin. And Kaladin explains to the reader that no Spren talk. Spren are very they thoughtless beings, I guess you could call them. They just gravitate towards whatever. They're just part of the scenery. They're more like insects more than spirits, I guess.
And then more than that, the Spren knows his name, right? Without him even, you know, mentioning that, which, yeah, right off the bat, I I was a little suspicious of the Spren, and maybe we'll find out later, but is it actually a Spren, or is this something else like masquerading as a Spren?
And also that's said, I don't mean to answer the question with a question. I don't even think I'm answering the question at all, but it said specifically with the Spren in chapter 2, the Wind Spren, that they can kind of like take a shape of whatever they want. It talked about the Wind Spren taking the shape of like a woman and such. And I don't know if they can just kind of be whatever they want, or if this one is unique and the other Wind Spren kind of all look the same. I was kind of confused, but.
So Wind Spren usually appear in one form, but some Spren can change forms, and Wind Spren can change forms. So Wind Spren, let's say they're blowing past a cloud, they're going to look like a cloud. If they're blowing with some leaves, they're going to look like some leaves. Or if they're, I don't know, you kind of get the gist. But
yeah,
this one changed forms on the spot, which is also an anomaly.
Suspicious.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about Kaladin. Chapter 1, you actually are thrown into the perspective of Sen, who is a 14-something-year-old boy, 12-year-old boy, something like that, who's thrown into the army. This is his first battle. And he, at the last second, changes... what's the word? What's the...
Platoon was what I always think of, but I don't know if that's accurate.
Right. Whatever the word they
squad.
Use is. Yeah, changes squad.
Squad, yeah.
To Kaladin squad, and he doesn't understand why. So let's talk about Sen for a second. Did any of you like Sen, dislike Sen, have any cares for Sen?
I liked Sen. I feel like I can relate to Sen in the sense that he doesn't know what's going on, and in this book so far, I don't really know what's going on. But, you know, he comes in and, you know, kind of sees Kaladin and, you know, him in, at this point, Kaladin Stormblessed and all his glory and such. And he's really confused. But I also liked how the whole battle and the whole chapter one really, I feel like, set a stage for what battles and such will be like. With Dalet referring to everything as a minor border dispute after it seems to be a huge... It seems to be much bigger than that.
Right. So...
Yeah.
Go ahead, Elliot.
Yeah, if that was a minor border dispute, man, it's going to be crazy once we get to an all-out war. I definitely felt sorry for Sen... The whole chapter, you know, why is a 15-year-old getting thrown into all this? Is the army really in need of soldiers that bad, or what kind of civilization is this that's conscripting the 15-year-olds?
Good.
Or did he volunteer? Or I don't know. I felt sorry. Poor guy.
Poor guy.
I felt like he was also in like the coolest group, though. It seemed like Kaladin Stormblast group was. The coolest, like, wow, I get to be with Kaladin and stuff. So, yeah, I felt like he was kind of lucky. Like, he was the one chosen kiddo to be in that group.
So this isn't...
Yeah, Kaladin definitely shows his honor right off the bat, right? Where you learn that Kaladin specifically picked Sen to, you know, watch out for him and take care of him. And I think Kaladin felt sorry for Sen, too, and wanted to... keep an eye on him, which says a lot already about Kaladin. And then at the beginning of the chapter 2, it says specifically how at the beginning of the battle, Kaladin stands out in front of his squad. He's the tip of the spear. He's not like the other squad leaders that kind of, you know, lead from behind and direct people where to go. He's out there. He's going to take the brunt of it. He's leading by example. Very, very honorable.
Yeah. I love Kaladin. I love... Kaladin is the main character of this story. And that's not really much a spoiler. And I think it's very interesting that Brandon Sanderson chose to introduce Kaladin through somebody else's eyes, as opposed to write the chapter through Kaladin's eyes, of trying to keep track of this 12-year-old boy and presenting him that way, as opposed to you're learning about Kaladin through everybody else's eyes. Everybody else sees him as Stormblessed or the honorable, like, captain, squad leader, the you see what I'm saying? That you're not
yep.
You're seeing him through his reputation, and he's also very young. He's extremely young, and he's already got this reputation of Kaladin Stormblessed, and Sen had already heard of him before he was even in this army, in this squad. And so that speaks a lot as Brandon Sanderson as a writer to talk about Kaladin that way, of introducing Kaladin, your main character, through somebody else. I thought that was interesting. Elliot, in your chapter one notes, you have what is with the warped air around him on page 41. Would you like to pull out this question?
Yeah, let me read a little section on this, because this caught my eye and made me wonder. Let's see here. So this is right in the middle of the action. So Sen has gotten separated, and Kaladin comes in to save him, and Kaladin's facing down a bunch of enemies. And let's see, it jumps in here. A third man froze, looking at his fallen allies. Kaladin shoved past a wounded enemy and slammed his spear into the gut of the third man. A fourth man fell with a knife to the eye. When had Kaladin grabbed that knife? He spun between the last two, his spear a blur, wielding it like a quarterstaff. For a moment, Sen thought he could see something surrounding the squad leader, a warping of the air, like the wind itself become visible. What the heck was that? Is that some kind of, like, magic, or is this just Sen's delirious because he's injured at this time? Yeah.
He is.
That caught my eye as interesting. Maybe there's more to that.
Probably just wind spren.
Possible.
Yeah.
Excitement spren.
Yeah.
So this is a good question. If you spin around in circles really fast, do you collect wind spren?
Or Dizzy spren?
Mm-hmm. Bin spren.
Yeah.
Do you think there's, like, battle spren and spear spren?
Probably. I would believe it.
Probably.
I'm talking through a microphone spren right now and using my computer spren, so I believe anything with spren is probably existent.
So here's the question. Is that one computer spren, or is it like a hard drive spren and a monitor spren?
Oh, no, it's just computer spren.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just computer spren. Yeah.
All the sprens. We can just only see some of them.
So he's known as Stormblessed, and my guess on that, my prediction, is that maybe he just has, like, this incredible aura, and maybe other people kind of see what Sen is seeing. Maybe it's not, like, very deliberately the wind is, like, I don't know, moving him through battle or something, but
yeah,
that he just really has this, like, strong, swift aura, and it's, like, noticeable, and people can kind of, like, I don't know, feel it or notice it and such. And that would be my guess. That I feel like it might be kind of tied to his name. I mean, the name could be totally unrelated, but that's my thought on that.
Interesting. Lots of questions, no answers yet.
Mm-hmm. I don't like that look in your eye.
Oh, it's all right.
That's the I know, but I'm not going to tell you look.
Well, if I told you, it wouldn't be any fun, now would it?
This is true.
I would enjoy it, but it's okay.
So chapter one, Kaladin is almost this deific. Is that the right word? Deific. Vision in Sen's vision. He's heard of Kaladin. Kaladin's very honorable, and you jump to chapter two, and Kaladin is ricketing along in this old slave wagon, and it's a very, very much a darker tone and what you were just reading the chapter before. And do either of you know the title of this chapter off the top of your head?
Off the top of my head,
honor.
It's honor.
Can I cheat and look in my book?
The title of the chapter is "Honor is Dead."
Hmm.
So there's a very clear division line between Kaladin now and Kaladin 8 months prior. You're in Kaladin's head in chapter two, and he explains how he certainly hasn't given up yet, but he is certainly a lot closer to giving up than he ever has been. He's very low, very depressed. Despair is a good word for it. He has certainly tried to escape multiple times since he's become a slave.
I think he said 10 attempts in like the last, I don't remember how long, 6 weeks or 6 months or something.
Yep. 6 months.
Quite a lot. Yeah.
And it's just a very different tone between chapter two and chapter one of where Kaladin's at mentally and physically.
I really like in chapter two, there's a big lots of distinguishable elements between him and the other prisoners. Mm-hmm. It talks about how things like he can read glyphs, and it talks a little more about his like talents and skill set and such, and how, you know, he's always looking for a weapon of some fashion, and how he's still, even though he's like malnourished and broken mentally and such, that he's like actively working to escape. I don't know where he wants to go after he escapes or what his plans are, but you know he wants to escape.
However, he does tell his fellow slave mate when his fellow slave comes and approaches him, gives him half of his bowl, and it's like, when you escape, take me with you, because he's expecting that he will escape because he's heard of him. And Kaladin is kind of resigned at this point, and he says, what's the point? They're just going to catch me again. I'm not going to escape. So we're definitely on a downward spiral as opposed to...
That's true.
It's a very low compared to chapter one, for sure. But towards the end of the chapter, there's still a glimpse, I think, of his honor. Like he's resigned to being a slave. He's kind of given up on trying to escape. He's given up on caring about the other slaves around him. But then when the slave master, to Vlakov, goes to kill the sick slave, Kaladin can't hold himself back from stepping in and trying to help that guy. He almost tries to not care, but he can't not care. He has to care. Exactly. And so he does jump in and tries to help him, and ultimately fails and kind of falls back into that state of despair. But I think the honor is not completely dead. There's still a little bit there, but he's definitely fallen a long, long way.
Yeah. So there's the dichotomy of two different views on honor. Honor is dead, and there's no reason to care about anything anymore. And Zeth, where honor is everything, and I'm going to do everything that they ask me to do because of my honor, I'm going to obey them. So where do principles come in here? Are you going to abandon your principles and follow honor to the letter? Or are you going to abandon your principles and not care about honor at all, you know?
Yep, for sure.
Certainly. It feels almost like Kaladin serves as a compass for moral behavior in the story thus far, in that he's not taking anything from anybody. He's discerning what should be done like in his own mind. It also talks a lot. He remembers a lot about stuff his father taught him, which I thought was interesting. Also showing more of a skill set in like healing and surgery, I guess, like basic knowledge of medical needs and such. You can see like whenever he tries to help with the sick prisoner and such, as well as in the chapter one, binding wounds and such is also another thing that kind of distinguishes him above other people and shows, you know, even though he's young, he's had a lot that's happened that puts him like as a very, very notable, strong character.
Good. He definitely seems a bit mature beyond his years. And I picked up too on the medical side of things, and especially the references to his father. It makes me wonder who his father was that he had such medical knowledge that he passed down to his son.
We do get to learn a lot of these things that we're discussing very quickly. So you won't be in the dark for too long. Don't worry.
Whew, good.
But then there are some things that we've brought up that we won't learn till book three. So don't worry about it.
What I wanted to bring up next, which I hope we'll find out before book three, is with Syl, the quirky little windspren who knows his name. Mm-hmm. I thought it was very interesting that, you know, she knows his name and such. We touched on that earlier. But I, not only is she, I guess, smart for a spren, but I really like how she seems clueless. She's asking him about, like, what's that leaf you got in your hand? And why are you here? Like, what are you doing? Like, very clueless, even though she knows a lot. She knows a lot and nothing at the same time.
Right. She's very much... She's very much beginning, just like her cognitive self, I guess you'd say. She's very new.
Yeah, it's how I imagine a child would be if, like, a newborn child could speak, almost. It's like, I don't know, somewhat. Maybe that's a bad comparison, but...
No,
I think like, naive and such, but...
Yeah, that's the exact word I was going to bring in. The little windspren came off as very naive and innocent, very much like a child. I think you're spot on.
Good. Well, I don't think we can go any further without reading any further. So we can wrap this up. Paul and Elliot, do you have any predictions on what our name means going forward? Any guesses?
So we're following someone very important.
Okay.
That's all I got. We're following something very important that we'll find out.
Okay. Noadon is important and we're following him. Okay.
Yes, for a reason.
So clearly Noadon must at this point be a knowledge spren, and he takes the shape of a book and he just kind of floats around, and we're like chasing after him, trying to catch the knowledge spren named Noadon. I have no doubts.
I really like the knowledge spren idea.
Okay. All right. Knowledge spren and important guy. All right. Those are our two predictions. Why are we following him?
Because he knows the answers to our questions.
Yeah. We got to get the knowledge from him.
We're going to figure out what spren are. Maybe he created spren. Who knows?
Oh, he's the original
spren. The original spren. That's our prediction.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Perhaps.
Solved. Episode one.
Yep. All right. Well, we will be doing chapters 3 through 6 next episode. And that will be live next week on Tuesday. Thank you for joining me, Paul and Elliot. It's been a pleasure. See you guys next week.
You're welcome. Thanks for guiding us through.
Yep.
Thank you, Noadon.
I am not Noadon. Let's get that clear now. I am not Noadon.
You're Noadon.
Us three are following Noadon. I might be a little bit in front, and you two are following Noadon, but I am not Noadon.
Okay, Noadon. We'll see.
Okay. All right.
Until next week.
Yep.